What's up, it's Chase Young.
What's up, this is Terry McLaurin.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick.
You're listening to the Washington Football Talk Podcast.
Another day, another training camp practice, another podcast. Today, arguably the most controversial position on the Washington football team performed and performed well. Will that be enough to calm folks down? Probably not. Let's get into it. Washington Football Talk Podcast.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase & Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase & Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? It's J.B. Finley. It's the Washington Football Talk Podcast. Me, Pete Haley, Mitch Sisler, we're all here. We're all brought to you by Orsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, want you to do the exact same thing. Check them out online, OrsmanVA.com, six locations all over Northern Virginia. Today, we're going to have a really good sit-down conversation with Mr. Brandon Scherff. He revealed what landed him on the COVID list. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk to the boys. My intro there, fellas, maybe it's because I'm doing radio and we get callers. People are big mad with Dustin Hopkins. I think it's a little premature considering it's just preseason. But I'm curious where you guys are with Hop, and then we'll get into kind of what we saw today.
I think at the end of the day, it's about making field goals, and he's got to do better. And that first game was an abject failure and kind of atrocious, but – I don't think it's time to necessarily just get rid of him right off the bat. I think that some of the snapping and holding and operation portions of it that Pete touched on in yesterday's pod from that Tressway was talking about are real. That being said, he's got to go out and make field goals on Friday night. And honestly, I think even if he misses one, they have to bring in competition. One thing about Dustin that I think kind of goes unnoticed or because there isn't a particular stat necessarily for it is his kickoffs. He's got a big enough leg that you can kick it through the back of the end zone kind of at will. And, you know, before now Nate Katzer, you had Ben Kotwicka, they started doing a little bit of the directional kickoffs, kind of the pooch kickoffs that would land at the goal line outside the hash marks. And that's something that Dustin Hopkins does really well and doesn't necessarily get noticed. And I think that he deserves, you know, some credit for how well he's able to kind of impact the kickoff game and the kick return game in that manner. At the end of the day, it's about putting points on the board. And if he's missing extra points or missing field goals, I don't know that how much longer that leash can be.
I understand the big madness with Dustin because last year was his worst year. And then he comes out and just doesn't do much to quell any concerns about him in the opener. I also do somewhat buy all this operational talk with Tress and Cheeseman and Hop. They were with Nick Sundberg for 7-8 years. And now, you know, Tress has to explain to Cameron Cheeseman where to stand on the sideline before they even enter the field of play. So there is an adjustment period. And I hope that the New England game was an eye opener for them. They've been repping this out all offseason, but Tress told us that the game atmosphere just felt different and they had some issues with what triggers the movements for this kicking operation. So they are hammering those details out is the word Tress used this week. And we better see some progress against Cincinnati, because if we do, then we can kind of buy into, okay, that was just a rough first experience. And if we don't, on the flip side, then this thing is going to start to truly spiral. I don't want it to become a situation where this is, you know, there's a team or two every year in the NFL that has just mass kicking issues. They bring in 4 to 5 guys. They rotate them every 3 or 4 weeks, and it's a complete mess. I don't think we're there yet. I think Hopkins has the ability to be reliable, but they need to show it against the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're making a little too much of this, right? Hop was really good to finish the year last year. I think that's why, I mean, Ron said he was going to bring competition in, and then Hop started nailing kicks, and then Ron said, hey, I was never bringing competition in, right? Like, that is more important than missing the two in the preseason opener. But the other side, like, Cheese isn't going anywhere. They just drafted him. Sundberg's not coming back. So, like, you got to get used to one another, boys, and she's been here since April. They've had a lot of snaps. What's Ron's number? 5,000? 10,000?
5,000.
You know, not there yet, but maybe they'll get there. I do think it'd be a good time for Hop to make a few kicks just to kind of calm down the storm. But listening to Bevich is interesting. I mean, that dude knows his world and the special teams. And he's like, the rhythm thing is a thing. They've been around each other 4 months now. Like, you'd like to think you figure that out. And maybe it's a little more tricky because that's their first game action. In my mind, he gets this week, Friday night, to prove there's no issues. Go out there, go 3 for 3, and just shut everybody up.
To JP's point about Hop finishing strong from the Dallas blowout on Thanksgiving to the rest of the year, Hopkins was 13 of 14. So he definitely righted the ship after some struggles. Yeah, the Cheeseman stuff, he's definitely not going anywhere. I do find it a bit odd how there's so much angst between Ron and other people about how fast Cheeseman snaps the ball. I understand maybe having the whole thing still be a work in progress, but they should be used to Cheeseman's velocity at this point. Apparently they're not. But again, let's hope that New England was the exception and not the rule.
And I think also you got to remember that last year, Hopkins early in the season was dealing with the groin injury and kind of kicked through, which I think led to some of the, you know, some of the inaccuracies that he had. But at the end of the day, once it's in kind of fans' minds that a kicker can make kicks, then it, you know, it's tough to get it out. You look at Washington football / Redskins kickers of yesteryear, and you have the Graham Ganoes and the Sean Sweezums and, you know, other folks that left here and went on to kick well in other places, and they felt like they were kind of run out of town before they got a chance to kind of settle their feet. Hop has been here a while, so it's not that his feet aren't settled, but I think he still has some good kicking days ahead of him.
You just said it was atrocious.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, I said missing two makeable kicks in a preseason game is atrocious. Do you disagree?
I'm not ready to run back down. No, I guess not. Atrocious is a hell of a word.
That was a little strong, but
I found the juxtaposition of those kicks were atrocious, but he's got plenty of good kicks in front of him. Interesting.
I said that I wasn't ready to run him out of town. If he misses some kicks on Friday, I think you're going to see some competition. But just because competition comes in doesn't mean that competition is going to win. I think that Hop probably should still be the kicker here. But if he misses more kicks here in the preseason, that grumbling is only going to get louder.
For the record, I'm against the competition, because if these three are having issues, build chemistry. Why would you introduce another kicker into this and then have that guy take away reps from Hopkins? I think Hopkins knows what's at stake. You let him handle the preseason, and if it's still a debacle by the third game, then you just sign the new guy. But yeah, let Hopkins try and work through this, because he has demonstrated the ability to be quite solid. Let's just see if this is just a kink that needs to be smoothed out.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, don't you still believe they're going to sign veteran DN number 4 at some point? Like, it's pro sports. People come and go. Like, we can't – not everything can be so rhythmically detailed that – you know what I mean? Like, it's a weird balancing act having this conversation, because, like, I think everything you're saying – and I was kind of saying all the same stuff until Bemich challenged me on it, that, like – yes, bringing somebody else in would disrupt Hopkins' practice with Cheese, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, we don't care about that. Like, if they were to bring in another DN, just for the sake of this conversation, or they just brought in another tight end, Caleb Wilson, like, that's going to eat into possible reps for Samus Reyes, but you still need more competition.
Yeah.
Position's so specialized that we can't treat it like the rest of the roster. And maybe it is. I don't know. But, like, it is worth pushing back on some of the questions. I think they should keep Hop. I think at least through this week before you bring somebody in. If you were to bring somebody in, the kid who's I have my eye on is the rookie the Ravens have. They're obviously going to keep Tucker. That dude came out and drilled a 43-yarder and a 52-yarder. The Ravens always seem to find these guys. That's who I'd be waiting for.
Do either of you guys know the story with in New England with Nick Folk and
they
found him on LinkedIn. Guy.
Right. Like, is that dude going to become available? Because Nick Folk's going to be ready to go for the season. I don't know but that dude hit a 50-yarder in the game and there was no problem with it.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this because I wonder if part of this is us aspirating ourselves into thinking you can't let Hop compete. part of it is us being logical and trying to slow down the speed of buzz. And when this buzz turns negative, it's hard to combat that. And that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, this is probably the most in-depth kicking talk we've ever done in 750 plus episodes of the Washington Football Talk Pod. But I do think it's warranted because this team's going to play some very talented opponents this year, and every point will matter. And if Hop is spraying them left and right, it could be quite costly.
Yeah, well, describe what happened today then, because what happened today I thought was encouraging.
Very much so.
There was a little special teams drill there where Hopkins and the group had five attempts against a somewhat live rush. It was to replicate a game situation, and he made all five. Now, they weren't bombs. They were from 33 to 40 or so yards, but each one of them went through. Each one of them was worth 3 points. And afterward, Tressway gave Hop a very invigorated high five. I think it meant a little something for them to have that quick five for five after all the discussions with Ron, and then Tress going to the podium yesterday and being pelted with questions too. So that could be a nice little thing to build off of. But again, the game situations is where they struggled and where they need to prove themselves fully.
Pete, was there a chest bump too, or just a high five?
Just a high five, no chest bumps, and no potentially broken ribs. JP, how are you feeling these days? I feel like I haven't heard you necessarily complain about it too much. Are you feeling better?
A lot better. I'm actually going to go hit golf balls for the first time since the incident. Or I guess since I played the day after the incident. But eventually we're going to have Mr. Chuck Honey on the podcast. He's the only true impartial observer in all of this.
Maybe the only sober observer, too.
Yeah. So eventually we're going to boil all this down. Eventually
I have no doubt that he poisoned his mind.
Chuck is impregnable. You think I could sway Honey, a dude that has a man cave worth more than all of our homes? You think he gives? I don't think I could sway him. I don't.
By
even
the time
know
we have Chuck
believes.
On, I'm going to take a baseball bat to your ribs.
I have never gone to that level of exaggeration. You guys just keep trying to say that because you're trying to. I think you're the one trying to get in the minds of people.
I did nothing wrong but chip a golf ball into a hole.
Does he sound a little nervous, Pete, about the real story?
Yeah, a little bit. I had my back turned to it. I only saw the aftermath, so I think Chuck would be the best person to decide one way or the other if there was any malfeasance.
Malfeasance.
Did you ever read the book A Separate Piece? I think it's by John Knowles.
I have not.
It's like a middle school book, I believe. Maybe high school. Well, Mitch, you read it?
No.
All right, well then, you guys can Google it later. It's not as cool if you haven't read it. But basically, it's the opening. We can talk about it later.
You know what that sounds like, JP? That sounds like a Tressway fine to Cameron Cheeseman when you start telling a story that doesn't have a good ending. Got to teach you to be a better storyteller. So
published in 1959. That's an old piece of literature.
Mitch, I would suggest that those in glass houses don't start trying to give out fines. If we're going to keep track of everything that ends with a good point, it'd be a long road for this podcast.
We'd be eating a hell of a dinner at the end of the season.
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Kia. Let's ride together.
I don't don't know that we quite want to go to one thing, but I just kind of want to sum up the day. Tomorrow we probably won't have a pod, and then we'll do a pod Thursday in advance of Friday night's game against the Bengals. We're going to bring back all the goodies, over-unders, and 100 chips for Friday night's game. At some point, I'll tweet out for over-unders, and you guys can send us your ideas. One thing that we will not be keeping track of is Joe Burrow's participation in Friday night's game. I can't say I'm shocked he's not playing. I mean, he blew up his knee less than a year ago. Probably, when was that game? Early November, mid-November? So that was probably 10 months ago. I mean, if he was my stud quarterback of the future, I wouldn't have him playing this early in the preseason.
Yeah, it was week 11. And there's been some reports out there that he's had some confidence issues. I think he's corrected them, but he was frustrated with how he felt with guys coming at him in the pocket. He just was picking his leg up prematurely, looking at the rush instead of looking downfield. So if you have that going on and sort of the mojo of him returning to the injury of his sight, there's no reason to trot him out there. So we'll just have to see this defense go against other guys, and it should still be a good test in front of the home fans.
I wouldn't even have him travel. I wouldn't even have him set foot at FedEx Field.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it Dwight Howard who injured his, like, some nerve or had some inflammation from a long airplane flight before he played for the Wizards and then basically didn't play the entire season? Don't even risk having something funky happen with Joe Burrow in the air. Let him get healthy. Let him be ready for whenever he's ready to come back, week one, if that's when it is. But no reason to mess around with it in the preseason.
Didn't expect to hear Dwight Howard's name in this podcast today.
Taking a deep cut. The other kind of
quarterback news is Kyle Allen, who says he can play Friday night. Back at practice, I don't know that he's looked great since he's been back. I think a couple weeks ago there was an honest debate if maybe Kyle could push Heinicke to be the backup. I mean, I don't think that's the case anymore. Now, obviously, these things could be fluid, but right now, I think Taylor's got a pretty damn good grip on things.
Yeah, I would say Taylor definitely seems to have that number two spot locked in. It's been a while since Kyle Allen's really been in the offense and throwing balls. I think it'll take him a little bit of time to get back right. He's certainly a young man that doesn't lack confidence because he keeps throwing deep balls and balls into coverage, kind of giving it, hopefully trying to give his guys chances, but there have been far too many errant passes. One of his first passes of the day today, he sailed it, and Troy Apke got an easy pick. It would have gone back for six the other direction. I think that he's firmly slotted in that number three spot for right now, and I would assume that it would take probably injury of some sort to Heinicke to unseat that number two position.
Yeah, with those two, it was kind of the principle of, when a quarterback goes away for a while, he becomes prettier than you remember him. And then Kyle Allen returned and has definitely struggled with accuracy. But he also told us today at the podium he started running a little scout team and running the other team's offense. So perhaps that could be a part of this. But regardless, he has not looked that strong. So he will need to get into a rhythm against the Bengals to even make Ron consider unseating Taylor as the numero dos.
Well, here's a question for you boys.
Sure.
Steven Montez was throwing lots of picks in practice, and we used to have a count. I think it was like 5 of 7 days practice ended with a Steven Montez interception. Montez stepped out and played decently against the Patriots in the second half there. Is there any chance that Steven Montez?
No.
When Steven Montez has to throw the ball more than 20 yards, when Montez has to throw the ball more than 20 yards in the air, slash just a deep ball period.
The answer is no. We don't even need to entertain this.
Okay, I just want to make my point. I've yet to see him throw a spiral on a pass further than 20 yards down the field. It's actually mind-boggling. So, no.
You enjoy dragging him too much. Mitch shouldn't have even asked. The answer is no.
I'm just talking to our listeners and giving them the updates. But, yes, let's move on to something
more debatable.
Yeah, but
you enjoy dragging that dude.
Pete, were you pushing Taysom Hill and Steven Montez
I was
parallels?
Pushing directly against it, as you know, and as you remember, and you're smiling as you bring that up. So screw that.
So unlike Adam Humphries and Lamar Miller, that take was correct, Pete.
Let's do one thing.
Real quick, another take.
Oh, boy. There's one thing I wanted to bring up, but Mitch is on a heater, so I don't want to slow him down.
No. I think Pete and I both talked about it yesterday, but Pete brought it up first with Dax Milne playing well at practice and today getting some first team reps. So kudos.
There goes my one thing. There goes my one thing. You rob, I rob yours once. Now you're robbing mine. Perfecto.
I was just trying to give you credit for getting another one right. So you're not always on the other end of it.
Zone. You're in a weird zone right now.
You guys didn't even have to stick around and wait for me today. Why are you all grumpy and fighting each other?
I'm not grumpy at all. I'm all smiles. Pete's the one that's all angsty.
Mitch has his big wooden spoon out and is stirring the pot for no reason. He's just getting me all riled up.
All right. Well, my one thing will definitely get you riled up, but you want me to do it?
Yeah, please.
So a while back, I don't remember when it was, but I feel like you've kind of said this a few times. Also, timestamp, Tuesday afternoon, 3 o'clock, location stamp. There's a massive accident on the Beltway. So I'm currently cutting through McLean, kind of at Lewinsville to Balls Hill Road.
Oh, yeah.
Georgetown. And I'm just going to live update everybody as I cut this dude off and get on the Beltway. Works like a charm, sucker. All right. American Legion Bridge, here we go. All right. Hope everybody enjoyed that live update. So Pete has said a few different times. Also, I'm on Bluetooth before some nerd gets at me about talking on a cell phone. Pete has said a few different times that this is the best team Fitz has been on. In Pete's defense, Fitz has said repeatedly, this is the best situation I've been in. But that's correct. Not the same as saying, this is the best team I've been on. And Pete has made a point of, you know, listing the skill position players on this team to justify his claim. So today, Ryan Fitzpatrick addressed the media for the first time, I feel like in a little while. I feel like we had to talk to him in a little while. And Pete, what was your question before he dunked on you? What was your specific question?
So you sent a dunk gif into the group chat. I don't think you heard it all. All I asked was what it's like working with Logan, and I listed a couple of tight ends he's played with. I said, you've played with good tight ends in the past, Scott Chandler, Delanie Walker, and then I went into my Logan thing, and afterward he said, well, I've also had O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, Mike Gesicki as well. I don't want to leave them out. Mike is sensitive. He would have been mad if he heard this interview.
I heard all that.
Okay.
But I think it directly, one, he was dunking on your question because you made the question seem like Logan's the best tight end you've ever worked with. And two, it directly pushes back on your, this is the best team he's ever been on. And we can let Mitch rule. Maybe I'm wrong, but that was why I sent a dunk gift in the group chat. And that's what it seemed like to me.
I think you're wholly out of line, and I think Mitch is going to agree with me on here, but Mitch, please rule.
I agree that it was a little bit of a dunk, and I think he was dunking a little bit on the Logan Thomas portion of it being the best tight end that he's played with. But to that extent, I don't think you could extend it out to include it be not meaning that it's not the best team that he's played on. Or take it as that. But he certainly pushed back on, I think, Logan being the best tight end because he played with a bunch of really, really good ones.
Yeah, I guess. So my point is not, there was no discussion on this being the best team he's ever been on. But I think, like, the pushback on just the Logan aspect of it speaks to what I've said before about, like, he played with Brandon Marshall, he played with Mike Evans, he played with Chris Godwin. Like, he's had lots of really good receivers. That's my larger
point. Yeah, I did kind of overlook those Bucks days because he didn't play much. And looking back at that roster, it's a sick roster. So, JP, you were right to point that out a while ago. But I was just asking strictly about Logan. I wasn't necessarily trying to get him to say it's the best tight end. I was just trying to get a question in there about Logan. So I think Fitz dunked on the tight end part, but wasn't dunking on my overall. He's on a really good spot. But regardless, it was funny. And then I told him that my name was Matt Paris afterwards. So hopefully he thinks I'm Matt Paris.
That was funny. And I didn't say, when it's a real dunk, I send the Sean Kemp gift, to be clear, in the group chat. And I did not send the show. I sent like a Scottie Pippen dunk. So it wasn't like, there was no crotch grab. There was no violence. It was just a good dunk.
Yeah, you sent Scottie Pippen in the Bulls days dunking over a Nick. He did shove whoever he dunked on. It looks like Ewing. But it wasn't Sean Kemp when he breaks the rim almost and does like a triple finger point.
I did go looking through the gifts to see if there was a James Harden dunk gif in there so Beard could dunk on Pete, but sadly that didn't exist.
We might have to keep track of that. But Harden doesn't dunk a lot. Might just have to be like a three, like a very deep three.
Or the what's the Harden gif with his eye? When he like slides away.
Yeah.
Maybe that might have been the perfect gif for what happened today. Because there was a guy with a giant beard that did the verbal meme of rolling his eyes.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I would not fight back. Yeah, definitely.
All right. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah. My one thing would be with Ron having said a couple of days ago he wants to get Jared Patterson some work on the kickoff return units. My only one thing with that is that he has been doing that. Jared Patterson has worked both as the returner catching the kicks and also as that next level, as I don't know if it's called the up man or what, but that first blocker ahead of the kick returner. He's gotten reps in both places, getting exposed to that, and Ron has been pretty pleased with what he's seen initially. And in terms of what he needs Jarrett to do kickoff return wise, I'm going to pull up the transcripts from the very helpful group of Washington Public Relations. He just wants him to be able to catch the ball and then being able to read the blocks as they're being set up. Oh, here's another phrase where he uses timing issue. It's a timing issue. The one thing with returners that have good timing is they are able to read it and feel it. And then he needs to make a move and go make the next guy miss and go. So that'll be some things for Jarrett to work on, and we'll see if he gets those chances against Cincinnati as they continue to look for various ways he can help this team in addition to his work at running back.
You know that's bad news for?
Peyton Barber and DeAndre Carter, both?
Definitely DeAndre Carter. I'm not as prepared to give him Peyton Barber's spot as others are, especially because when Patterson couldn't bust it in from the one, they then brought in Peyton Barber, who did it. Like, that stuff's still going to matter. Yeah. But I think it's very bad news for DeAndre Carter.
Definitely.
And probably Steven Sims, too.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny. I'll tell you after the pod who it was, but I just got a text from somebody we all used to work with and kind of for about Steven Sims. And they were asking how Sims looking. And I was like, man, I think right now, at best, he's the seventh wideout on six wideout team. And the reply was, oh, man, I remember that kid had so much juice that year in Richmond. And I was like, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Last year, it's kind of juice-free, or negative juice even. So kind of an interesting little combo, and I'll tell you guys who it is afterwards.
Yeah. My one thing is on Antonio Gibson, who just kind of flies under the radar. I don't know that we've talked about him basically at all in this podcast. And he looks really good, and he's on the field for a lot of what would be three down plays. You know, you see him run the ball on first and second. They're working on getting him the ball through the air a little bit more. He's running some routes. They're splitting him out they're splitting him out wide and throwing him some go patterns and some hitches and all the different wide receiver routes that we know that he used to run when he was in Memphis. And more importantly, I think was when they do a lot of red zone work, he's getting those short yardage carries. He's getting a lot of those, you know, goal line carries. And I think that's important as we talk about Peyton Barber and what happens at the back of the running back room, to point out that maybe they're going to start giving Antonio Gibson some of those third and ones. Maybe you still want your best, most explosive running back to be carrying the ball, because, you know, how many times over the years do you see third and one, you break through the line and you're by everybody. I don't know that Peyton Barber is running away from an entire defense, but I'll tell you, Antonio Gibson could. So I'm intrigued with how much he's going to be on the field this year. I think he's going to taking a really big step in terms of, you know, last year they were working him into the offense a little bit. And certainly when it came to most passing downs, JD McKissick came in and you saw Peyton Barber come in on short yardage stuff. I think we're going to start seeing Antonio Gibson get a little bit more of both of those pieces of work. And I'm excited to see what he has.
To your point, Mitchell, 5 of Gibson's 11 rushing touchdowns were from 3 or fewer yards. So he demonstrated plenty of ability to get that job done if they want to just dump Peyton Barber and get a roster spot somewhere else.
Well, and kind of to that point, you know, the fantasy crowd is very, very curious on Gibson. And one thing that stands out to me, when you watch him in the 2-minute drill, they largely go to that turbo set. And last year, that was almost exclusively JD McKissick's territory. And this year, I'd say it's 50-50, Gibson and McKissick, and maybe even trending towards Gibson get even more of that work. Another thing, and maybe this is like something we put a pin in and circle back to, but Pete and I, and maybe you, Mitch, I don't remember, got a really interesting tweet, and I'm driving, so I don't know who said it, and I'd like to credit them. But basically asked, you know, with this team having Gibson and McKissick as wide receivers turned running backs, does that maybe make them less dependent on keeping six wideouts because they have running backs with real receiving skills? And maybe that's a way you go five wideouts, four running backs. I don't necessarily see it, but it's an interesting theory, certainly, because they have enough. At some point, it's just about pass catchers, right? And it's not necessarily about what position they play. If you can find that tweet, Pete, I'd love to credit that person. But if not, no big deal.
Yeah, I think Mitch might be digging it up. It was last night. And, yeah, I don't know if I fully agree with it either, but J.D. McKissick did catch 80 freaking passes last year. So he's definitely got the hands to do it. And that can be a route for this.
How many did he catch? 80. We were debating this. Damn, so he didn't break the record. Mitch today on the radio, when we were doing 20 questions, we were talking about Larry Centers. Centers, I think, had 81 catches. That's crazy. I think, so McKissick needs to get the running back receiving record with 80 catches. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I think every week Ryan Billy, our statistician and extraordinaire in other ways at NBC Sports Washington, was updating us. And I couldn't remember if McKissick passed him or not. But regardless, a dude with 80 catches and, of course, Gibson's receiving chops there too. A nice way, again, when it comes down to the 53-man cuts, which I think are in 2 weeks from now, could be a way to budget out somewhere else if you want another lineman or a linebacker, et cetera.
Just in case Billy listens, I think Billy's title is something much bigger than that, and just because we don't know doesn't mean we don't appreciate you, Billy.
Yeah. I know. For this podcast, he's a statistician. He does way more things and way more important things than that. So, Ryan, I know you like to, like, crap on me sometimes. Please don't crap on me for this. You're way smarter and better than I am. Mitch, go ahead.
He's the official statistician of the Washington Football Talk podcast.
He is. He's also the senior producer of all cap schemes.
That sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
I'd rather be the statistician.
That tweet came from our guy, Tory Key, at Key to the Throne, is the one who brought up the, do we really need six receivers when we have two running backs that they can both throw in the slot? Both of those guys have played receiver before McKissick.
Nice.
It's an interesting thought because – one of those receivers is down on game day anyway. Like, they're inactive. So it's a quite interesting thought. All right, enough. I say we go to Sheriff. Speak now.
Me
or
too.
Hold your peace till first.
Me three.
All right, here comes Brandon. Sheriff, thank you for listening. You made it this far. I owe you a beer.
Always a pleasure to get to talk to Mr. Brandon Sheriff, all pro right guard Brandon Sheriff. How does that roll off the tongue? Like, are you introducing yourselves now as, hey, I'm an all pro?
No, not at all. Just say, hey, what's going on? That's about it. But, you know, set goals for yourself and try to achieve them. And that was off of last year's play. So, you know, you got to improve off of what I did last year and just continue to grow and get better.
What are the goals this year then?
Just continue to work with Sam. You know, he's doing a heck of a job for us these last 4 weeks. So just continue to build that cohesiveness with him. And then us five up front, just be the best offensive line that we can be.
You're a guy that started right away as a rookie. Does he have what it takes?
Absolutely. You know, he's strong. He's smart. Best thing is he's quiet. You know, he wants to learn. He wants to improve each and every day. I caught him watching film of us back in 2015. He picks out some of his favorite tackles to watch, and he watched them. So he's trying to improve each and every day.
We all know this is a cutthroat business of pro football. Was it tough for you to line up to somebody next to that isn't Morgan Moses?
You know, somebody asked me that earlier. You know, I appreciate everything that Morgan did for me. We played 6 years together. And I played every game with him besides two at right tackle. So, yeah, it was hard. But, you know, like you said, it's a business. And Sam's going to be a heck of a player for us, and I'm excited to work with him.
You've worked with a lot of quarterbacks here.
Yep.
How does Fitz compare?
He's awesome. You know, there's a reason he's been in the league for so long. He's funny. He likes to chirp with other people and get into it with other people. So it's kind of fun seeing your quarterback like that. He's smart, and he's just a great teammate.
Best chirper since Kirk, maybe?
I wouldn't say Kirk was really a chirper, but...
Who was the last chirper, then?
As far as quarterback?
Yeah.
Fitz?
Gotcha. You're kind of a chirper these days. I've been noticing a lot of pushing and shoving with the D-line.
Oh, you were just having fun.
But it seems like whenever that starts to happen, you, like, really enjoy it and get in there.
Yeah, you know, just try to get on somebody's nerves. It's practice. You know, you got to have fun with it and just have fun with it.
Is it you and Montez Sweat kind of leading those charges from opposite sides?
Montez, you know, Payne's chirping too. John's always chirping. Ioannidis was out a couple weeks, and now he's back chirping. So the biggest one is Chase, though.
He's also the biggest one.
Yes.
So he's leading the charge.
Yep.
A lot of folks are saying that could be the best D-line in football going against them every day. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, shoot, we get a chance to work with them each and every day. So they're making us better. We're trying to make them better. And, you know, they were amazing last year. And like you said, with 98 coming back, they're going to be even more of a threat for everybody else.
People sleep on 98, especially his ability to get upfield and pass rush. You mentioned that Ioannidis missed some time. You missed some time on the COVID list. How tough is it to still be dealing with all of that as a player and locker rooms and all of this?
It's tough, you know, but rules are rules, and you have to abide by them. So mine was contract tracing. So I sat out for 5 days and came back. I had Wes Martin bring me some cleats home so that I could go and get my workout in while they were at practice. So I tried to stay in that routine of when they were at practice, I was doing my workout, and then I was meeting with them. So, you know, it's really tough being away from football. So, you know, but those are rules.
Is this the best team you've been on?
As far as?
In Washington. I'm not going back to your Hawkeyes days, but here.
Oh, no, I got what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, we have the chance to be as good as we want to be. You know, like you said, we have a fantastic defense. We have a fantastic offense. We got a lot of weapons. You know, Curtis hasn't even been out there yet either, so we're excited to see him out there. You know, Terry and all those wide receivers. AG's back. Peyton's back. Logan, you know, we could be as dangerous as we want to be.
Last two for me, because I know you got to run. How happy are you I didn't ask you about contract questions?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer them if you want me to.
Well, I think it's nice that it's done now. Like, you can't negotiate anymore. You'll deal with it in March, right?
Yep, absolutely. You know, there's no reason to worry about it right now, and I don't, you know, just go out there and play football, and we'll worry about it next year.
Have you ever seen a human square quite like Chris Kerwin, a guy that's quite as wide as he is tall?
He's all right, but that Wisconsin hat, he can take that off.
The Scotty's a big problem for you? Who's the biggest Iowa rival?
Biggest Iowa rival? I mean, Iowa State, Minnesota. Those are all of our trophy games. Wisconsin, Minnesota. You know, last time we played, I give Chase, last time we played Ohio State, we whooped them. So,
what do you? I love talking college football with you. Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC.
Yep.
Is that what do you think the Big Ten's going to do?
They're not going to the SEC.
What if Iowa went to the SEC?
There's no way.
That'd
we'll
be wild.
We'll stay in the Big Ten.
Thank you for the time, dude.
Yep,
I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to live update everybody as I cut this dude off and get on the beltway. Work like a charm, sucker! All right.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.